It is time for the single coolest sports show in the country, The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.
You've got Matt Bonner, who my notes tell me is a sandwich blogger named Red Mamba. I mean, how can you not like a guy like that?
And the Red Rocket knocks down the triple.
Red Rocket, telling you, Red Mamba might not miss a shot.
Just like in politics, in the instructional video business, you need credibility.
You want credibility? I'll give you credibility. Hey, Tim, what's my nickname?
The Red Rocket.
No.
The Sandwich Hunter.
No. Fry Gun.
The Medium Fundamental.
Well, welcome to The Life of Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan here in the great state of New Hampshire. Matt Bonner down in San Antonio, Texas, for this edition of the program. It is our special Granite State Baseball dinner edition of the show. So we'll hear from Chris Carpenter, of course, one of the great New Hampshire baseball players of all time. Also Hall of Famer Tony Perez and Louis Tiant, Red Sox great, who should be in the Hall, amongst others, coming up in just a little bit here on the program. Also, kid from Concord, who was drafted by the Pittsburgh Pirates and looking to make it with Neil Huntington's squad. Of course, Huntington from Amherst, New Hampshire. So that's in the middle segment of the program. But between now and then, expert analysis and insight on everything with myself and Matt. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Great. Appreciate joining us for the program. We'll start with the expert analysis and insight on the Boston Celtics. How surprised, if at all, are you that the Celtics are where they are at this point? And do you think it is sustainable?
I think everybody's pretty surprised, especially after a tough injury to one of their, you know, presumable new stars that they acquired this offseason in Gordon Hayward, losing him for the season in game one, and then losing the first two games only to come back and win every game since. I'd say they're ahead of schedule of where anyone thought they would be.
Do you think that, I was talking about this with a couple of the Celtics reporters down at the game, the Warriors game actually, and we'll talk with Al Horford as well as Klay Thompson about that game, which was a phenomenal one last week and obviously one of the highlights of the year for the Boston Celtics. But the question was, do you think that the Celtics have been able to accelerate in terms of coming together and their progress and becoming a team because of Gordon Hayward's injury? And it seemed like a lot of the folks thought that, and myself included, that as strange as it may sound, the Hayward injury helped the Celtics come together quicker because it took away, you know, a huge piece that was going to have to kind of fit into the puzzle. And it also created, you know, that injured animal mentality of, here's what we have to do. We're going to have to play harder. We're going to have to all do better as a team because we have this huge piece that is missing. So I think that the Celtics, you know, 15-game win streak going into tonight is has a lot to do with the fact that the team was forced to come together so quickly based upon the injury.
It's an interesting theory, for sure. I mean, only the guys in the locker room would be able to answer that one. For whatever reason, they definitely overcame that adversity. You know, whether, like you said, it was possible they used it as psychological fodder to come together quicker than they normally would have out of necessity. Who knows? But whatever they have going right now, chemistry-wise, it's definitely working. I was really impressed, like you, like I'm sure every basketball fan on the planet, with that come-from-behind victory against the Golden State Warriors. That win there kind of sold me a lot more on the Boston Celtics than I had been sold up to that point. That was an incredible game.
And, you know, to me, I was sold not because they beat the Warriors, but because of the collection of work that surrounded it. Like, they'd beaten the Warriors in the past, but it's still, you know, we felt like the Celtics were a ways away because there were, you know, the losses along the way to other teams, or you could see, you know, clearly see the deficiencies in the club. And to the Celtics, with the Celtics right now, you look at them, and to me, that win kind of complemented their body of work. It was a big part of it, but it didn't, you know, it didn't stand alone. It wasn't like, okay, we could be a great team now at some point because they beat the Warriors. to me, it was a continuation of everything, you know, that they had done. It complemented the work as opposed to kind of being a standalone type thing. And that's what jumps out right now. And again, you should never judge a team by its highest point or its lowest point. Take all the work and you put it together as one. Obviously, when you're winning 15 games in a row, it's a struggle to find some low points with the club. But even when you do find them, it seems that they're just not all that significant. Like, I would like to see, you know, perhaps somebody in the mix that could shoot the three a little bit better. But that's been, you know, obviously a problem for a couple of years. That guy that you can rely on to consistently stick the three when the other team is going on a run, or you feel like nothing is going for you, the ball sticking. But you have somebody like a Kyle Korver, Matt Bonner type, who can come in and stick a couple threes and move it in the other direction. But outside of that, particularly on the defensive end, I see no real weaknesses with this team. And the defensive end, I think that's the most significant thing, is that this team does not really have any weaknesses defensively. We talked for years about the interior play and that it wasn't there. There wasn't the bodies that you could rely on to rebound and to defend and be that great help defender. But now with Baines and Tice, that role feels filled. And the other thing is, I underestimated how good Marcus Morris is. He is a really good defender, not a great rebounder, but he's a really good defender. And he's a really good offensive player. And that really seems to be, you know, the thing. We talked about it before, where the Celtics, to me, are somewhat reminiscent of that 14 Spurs team, where you have some really good all-star caliber players, but it's the collection, it's the group of eight really talented players. That was the other thing about the Warriors game, Matt, is that Brad Stevens coached that game like it was a playoff-type game. The bench shrunk, and, you know, he didn't go 10 or 11 deep like we've seen in the past.
Trying to find the downs over the last 15 games, you see it in the articles too. You know, Coach Stevens coming out and saying, you know, yeah, even though we won, we have to play better, we have to do this better, we have to do that better. So I think every coach needs to keep his team's edge, and it's tough to do when you're winning so many games in a row. It's just human nature to relax after you start winning. We see that psychology really come into play in the playoffs. But it's been fun to watch. It's still a ton of season to go. I think they have a good mix of veterans with those young guys who understand the process and understand how much further they have to go, how much better they have to get, and can kind of hold each other accountable in the locker room that way as well, which is great. Having Baines in there as your kind of enforcer, bruiser, I think is an important piece that they were missing last year, like you said. And also, we talked a lot about losing Avery Bradley and kind of their top perimeter defender, mm-hmm. what that would do to the overall team defense, but it seems like they've made up for that and then some.
Yeah, I still think that they could use Avery Bradley, but Marcus Morris has provided something up front. I mean, the trade has started to look a little bit better to me. I mean, that was the only move this offseason that I was not didn't quite understand. We'll put it that way. Nobody, I think, was in love with the Isaiah Thomas trade because of what Isaiah Thomas had meant to the franchise. But you could see it. You could understand it. You could see the end game. But the Morris for Bradley trade, most people viewed it as kind of being a situation where they weren't going to re-sign him, and they needed to free some cap space, and that's what took place. But you wondered if they could have traded somebody else. But that's neither here nor there, and we see, obviously, the impact that Avery Bradley has had with the Detroit Pistons, because you look around the league right now, and there are a lot of teams that are performing much better than expected, and certainly the Detroit Pistons are one of those teams. And you talked about the unlikely victory for the Boston Celtics over the Golden State Warriors, given that they were down 17 points with 5 minutes to go in the third quarter. The Spurs-Thunder game was also extremely unlikely and surprising. Granted, the lead was bigger early than late in that game, but you know, watching the first half of the Spurs-Thunder just felt like it felt like the Thunder were the better team, and they'd struggled a little bit, and they were going to find their way, and they were going to hold on for that. But that was a great victory, obviously, for the Spurs, and speaks to the system and Coach Pop's ability to find ways to win, and that roster's way to find ways to win despite who's on the floor. But the other thing on the flip side is your former coach Billy Donovan and that Oklahoma City team. It's interesting, their rate of progress as compared to the Celtics, where there were excuses being made in the broadcast on ESPN. Well, they're still coming together, and there's still the integration process, and they're finding out how to close games. And you have three veteran players in Carmelo Anthony, Paul George, and Russell Westbrook that aren't, seemingly coming together very quickly with Oklahoma City, as they have been obviously one of the disappointments early.
Yeah, and just one more quick thing on the Celtics before we move on to that. When I look at that Celtics lineup, one thing I do like is the versatility you have with Morris and Tatum, guys where and you need this to win a championship. It's been proven every year. You need to be the ability to go small.
The matchups,
and the Celtics have multiple guys who are capable of doing that, which gives them great versatility going into the playoffs for matchup wise when teams try to go small.
And you have the bigs too. You have the bigs too, where you have Tice and Baines who can come in and provide that. So if you go in that direction, you can go with bigs with the four wherever you want to categorize Horford. You have him, and you could go either small or big with multiple guys who you can rely on to give you really, really good minutes.
Absolutely, and now on to that Oklahoma City San Antonio game. You're right, that was a great game. It was exciting, I think, for the league in general, that was a game that was on ESPN, so the whole country could see that contest. But I mean, Oklahoma City, that was something we talked about. I think everybody talked about before the season. Yes, it's all well and fine. You got three veteran all-stars, superstars, all on the same team, and Steven Adams as well. But there's only one basketball. So how do they, figure out chemistry-wise on the offensive end what the best mix is to maximize that potential? And then B, most superstars aren't generally super interested on the defensive end of the ball. So how do you get everybody to buy in on that end as well?
Right.
Now, obviously, if you achieve that, the team could be spectacular. Talent-wise, with Paul George, Russell Westbrook, and Carmelo Anthony, and then Steven Adams, and then you got Roberson, the other starter in that starting lineup, not super talented offensively, but just a freak on defense. That's a team that can match up with anybody, including the Golden State Warriors, on a night-in, night-out basis. But, the caveat is, they got to figure it out, and it's clear thus far they haven't figured it out. We saw a glimpse of it in the first quarter of that San Antonio game, and it was scary. They were up like 20 points in the first quarter at San Antonio, and San Antonio's coming off a loss. Like, it's not like that was they were due for a performance like that. That was just Oklahoma City showing what its potential could be. Unfortunately, just couldn't sustain it for much longer than that first quarter.
Yeah, OKC 7-8 on the season, 2-7 against the West. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment of the show brought to you by Revision Energy. What can sunshine do for you? Check out Revision Energy at revisionenergy.com. In return, we're going to do some Celtics and Warriors, take a look back at the Patriots' victory over the Raiders, and go in-depth the Granite State Baseball Dinner with some legends of the game. You're listening to The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. Welcome back here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan. This segment of the show brought to you by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. If you've been injured, the most important decision you're going to make is who your lawyer is going to be. We recommend you check out Douglas Leonard and Garvey at NH Law Office. Boston Celtics sit atop the NBA with a 15-2 record. They have won 15 straight games, including a 92-88 victory over the Golden State Warriors, a game in which they trailed by 17 points with 5 minutes to go in the third quarter, but their defense and inspired play in particular from Jaylen Brown got them back in the game. They went on a 19-0 run, led by two late in the third, went on to win it, thanks in large part to clutch free throw shooting down the stretch by Kyrie Irving. Al Horford was great in this game as well with a double-double, and I talked with him about the Celtics' victory.
What's most significant to you about this victory and how you guys won?
Just the resiliency of our group. We kept talking in the huddle. I kept telling the guys, you know, just to stay with it, you know, keep playing the right way. They were doing a good job, but we were also, I think, a little jittery as a group, missing a lot of good looks that we normally make. But with all that, we stayed and played defense and stayed with it, and that allowed us and put us in position to win the game at the end.
You're down 17 in the third, the 19-0 run. What spurred that? Was a particular play, moments, something collectively?
Really don't know. I think that just Jaylen's shots were big for us. And I think that those really got us going. And then we got stops. And it just felt like everything was turning, you know, in our way.
Horford right there with 18 and 11 for the Celtics in the contest. Knocking off the champs is what they did on Thursday night. And we also talked after the contest with Klay Thompson. One of the big stories for the Celtics in this game was their defense. They held Klay Thompson and Steph Curry to 8 of 32 shooting.
I switch a lot. And they had great ball pressure at the end of that third quarter. So nothing we didn't see. We just didn't make as many shots we usually do. Can't remember the last time he scored in the 80s, so that was rare.
Was it their defense or you guys offensively, you think?
It was a combination of both. They're a tough team, and they play very hard. Might not be pretty most of the time, but they play extremely hard, and that will win you a lot of games in this league.
The Celtics are trying to obviously get where you guys are. Do you see them being at that point yet?
No. No, it takes a lot of basketball to get there, but they have a good, young, hungry team, and they're on an incredible streak right now, so you got to give them credit. But, they got a better record than us, so you can say they're better than us right now.
Well, Klay Thompson right there. Much more on the Celtics coming up next week here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the show brought to you by Douglas, Leonard, and Garvey. We transition to baseball now, and it's something I've talked about for a long period of time. I thought that Louis Tiant should be a Hall of Famer, and he finally has the opportunity to be up again for election. This time, the Modern Baseball Committee taking a look at that. They'll announce their decision coming up, I believe, December the 15th at the winter meetings. And he was one of the guests at the Grand State Baseball Dinner, which is a great dinner which takes place in the middle of November of each year and benefits the Children's Hospital at Dartmouth. Chris Carpenter has long helped out this effort and really helped to make the dinner what it is today and continues to be. He, of course, retired from baseball following the 2013 season. He won a Cy Young Award back in 2005 and two World Series with the St. Louis Cardinals, 144 wins for him in his career, a three-time All-Star, but he really made his name in the postseason where he was 10-4 with an ERA of 3 for the St. Louis Cardinals, one of the great postseason pitchers of his generation, one of the great pitchers of his generation. I spoke with him at the Granite State Baseball Dinner.
So the Granite State Baseball Dinner, which benefits Chad, it's one of the great things that happens in the winter here in New Hampshire. And $1.7 million has been raised over the years, and Chris Carpenter's been a big reason for that during his major league career and now in retirement. What does that mean to you, the fact that you have raised that much money for such an important entity?
Well, it's great. To have the ability to have an event like this that continues to give back to our community and give back to Chad and just all the great people that are a part of it, the work that they put in for it. It's just neat. And then again, I say every year, at this time of year, you're always looking for something warm to think about because you're starting to get cold. You're starting to see a little bit of snow here and there, and it gets you excited about baseball again, too. So there's a little bit of everything that goes on, and it's definitely a great event that's grown over the years that continues to grow, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
And I think particularly after this last World Series, and I know when you won World Series in 2011, 2006 around here, there was such an excitement in the Red Sox 2-13 for, baseball just kind of ended and you want to kind of continue it as well and to talk about baseball and for the winter going up. And obviously the last World Series was so phenomenal, and watching, you know, Justin Verlander pitch, particularly during that postseason, brought back a lot of memories of watching you pitch.
Yeah, it was a great series. It was great for baseball. I think all the playoffs was great for baseball. It was exciting. It brought some young, really exciting players in this game to life, where people all over the country, all over the world got to see. But it also brought back some memories of some older guys that everybody was started to push away, and in Justin Verlander, guys like that came back and showed that they still have it, and it showed what it takes to pitch at that level and at that time of the year. And of course, Justin is one of the great ones ever. So it was fun to watch him go too.
How do you watch a game like, you know, say Game 7 of the World Series? Do you watch it like a fan, or do you, you know, pinpoint how you would, you know, go about going after hitters?
Yeah, I still kind of dissect it, dissect how you're going to go about the game plan. And so I watch it a little bit as a fan, but I still I'm there as a player too.
And obviously the baseball world lost Roy Halladay, and you talked a lot about him and the bond that you had when you won the Cy Young. You talked about being on a fishing boat, obviously, with him. Obviously that hit everybody pretty hard. I'm sure you were one of the hardest hit.
Yeah, it was a tough loss for everybody. Tough loss for not just baseball, but the country. And he's a great man, and he brought a lot of excitement and joy to people in their lives. And he's going to be missed for a long, long time.
It seems like there's certain guys in sports, and Ortiz, I think, was that way with the Red Sox, and Halladay as well, where they touch so many different people. And you know, unfortunately with Roy, I don't think a lot of people knew how much he touched everyone until afterwards, where guys on other teams, guys like yourself, would talk about, this is the person who kind of laid the foundation, not just for me in baseball, but also in life.
Yeah, and again, you know, it all goes by region, right? Everybody knows about David Ortiz here. And, you know, of course, I think David was probably a little bigger than most with his personality and his outgoing personality. But there's guys all over the country from all organizations that do so much in their communities, not only in the communities where they play, but the communities that they live in. And they don't always get recognized for what they're doing, because they're not that guy that stands out, that's on TV, that's doing commercials, that are doing all those things. They're just in the background doing the things that are important to them. And Doc was one of those guys. And like I said, there's guys like that through our league that are all over the country doing that. And again, it was somebody that he wasn't recognized as much as he should have been for that stuff, but he is an amazing human being.
Final thing, what separates the guys that are, you know, the number ones, the Chris Sales, yourself, Kluber, Verlander, we talked about before, and other guys in the rotation? Is there a particular mindset that exists amongst those types of guys?
Well, I think that they're developing now guys that aren't capable of doing that, which is unfortunate. Justin Verlander, Chris Sale, Clayton Kershaw, guys like that are guys that take the ball and expect to finish the game. And that doesn't say that guys like Rich Hill or anybody else doesn't expect to finish the game. They just don't get the opportunity to do it anymore. It's unfortunate for baseball, because when I was coming up, it was your job as a starting pitcher. That's what made you a starting pitcher, was you go out and you were able to get through the lineup 3-4 times and go deep into ball games. And they're not allowing their guys to do that anymore. And I hope that, you know, eventually that might turn back to them allowing it, but they don't develop them. They don't develop them to do it.
Our Chris Carpenter right there. Tony Perez was in attendance as well, the Hall of Famer from the Big Red Machine, one of the great run producers in baseball history, as he finished 30th all-time in RBIs and played a couple years with the Red Sox as well, had a good season in 1980 with the Boston Red Sox. Here is Tony Perez.
When you think about baseball history, the Gas House Gang, Murderers Row, and the Big Red Machine are the names that come to mind. Where is your team's place, in your view, in Major League history in terms of the all-time dynasties?
Well, we got a great team. I mean, we got eight guys who go out there every day and know how to play the game and know how to play to win. And we got a good pitching staff to keep up close, and we can come back in anybody.
It seemed like there was a great mix of everything, too, particularly with that lineup. I mean, that's what comes to mind, is that lineup was a murderer's row type lineup, persistent. And you were the guy that seemed to come through with, you know, the big hits, whether it was in 75 against the Red Sox, 76 off Catfish Hunter in that game, too, with the walk-off. Do you see that as being your role? And were there certain roles the guys had in that lineup, or do you just go out and mash?
Well, since I stopped playing the game, I played to win. And the only way you can win is if you get a good pitching and you score an off run. For I can drop the big run every time when the game is close, I think that's my role to do. I take that like my job.
How about the managing of the personalities on that team? Obviously, Sparky Anderson had his work cut out, where you had, you know, Pete Rose, the huge personality. Jim Morgan, we heard him on, obviously, you know, doing baseball for years on TV. Johnny Bench had one of the big personalities. How did you mold? How did those all those individuals mold together?
Well, Sparky was great. He was a great manager. He knows the thing he have, and he understands the players, and he didn't take care of the players, the regular player, but he take a good care of the pitching and stuff, and because he know we're going to score runs anyway.
It's interesting because my last question for you is about this individual right here, Louis Tiant. He is up to go into the Baseball Hall of Fame this year in the Modern Committee, and I've been saying for years that he deserves to be there. Do you think that this is finally the year that Louis Tiant gets his due?
I don't know why, because he's waiting for this voting now. He's supposed to be in the Hall of Fame a long time ago. With the writers voting, he's supposed to, because he got the numbers, and he's one of the greatest pitchers. Very tough on me. I didn't hit him too well.
An historic figure too, and coming over from Cuba the way that he did, and he was one of the bigger players in that generation. You look at his numbers next to Catfish Hunters. We mentioned him earlier. They're exactly the same.
The same. I don't know why Catfish deserved it too. He went on the first voting and Louis never make it. I don't know. That's not right for me.
Louis Tiant came over just towards the end of that interview. Then we sat down with El Tiante for a while to talk about the Baseball Hall of Fame. Is this finally the year that El Tiante gets in?
So I've been pushing for years that it is time for Louis Tiant to be in the National Baseball Hall of Fame. And I think that this is the opportunity. You've told me over and over again that they better put you in before you're dead, because you'll come back and you'll haunt them. This is the chance. Do you think? What are you thinking about it this time?
I don't think anything. I mean, I really disappointed with them for all of year. They're supposed to put me and that the other guys, not just me. And they play game with us. Some they even wait till somebody die and then they put him in. What good is that? I mean, I think you working hard enough. You put some number. And you should be in there. You know, the number is there.
Right.
There's nothing you inventing or you just putting your name and putting a few numbers. No, it's there. And you can't take it that away from me or anybody.
Yeah, I've gone through all the players before, and we've talked about it. Catfish Hunter, just from your era, has the exact same statistics as you do. And what do you think, why have the games been played? Why do you think you've been kept out when the numbers are there? Not only that, but you were one of the bigger stars in your era, and you're an historic figure in the fact that you came here from Cuba. So what do you think has kept you out? And do you think now that the players are involved and this committee is smaller and it's more focused on I think, baseball-type stuff, that things will be different?
Well, I don't know. I'm not going to sit down worrying about these people. You know what? I thank a guy every day. Okay, buddy. They let me do what I did. And I do more than I never thought I was going to do in my life. Yeah. You know what my Hall of Fame is? My family. Forget about everybody know baseball, know I'm supposed to be in the Hall of Fame. Only these guys. They don't want it for whatever reason they are. I don't care no more. I'm not going to worry about them. When they put my name there, and then I know I'm there. I'm not going to sit down now and thinking all night, oh, he might put me this time. Maybe I don't care. Whatever they do, fine. If they don't do, fine too. I'm waiting. Maybe someday they decide to put me in there. It's now fine.
Yeah. If they do put you in, you give the chance to give that speech. Will you pass along the message that, you know, you and other individuals have been, you know, wronged in that you have not been put in the Hall of Fame in a timely fashion and you've been given the honor that you've deserved?
You know what? Bottom line, you know, talk is cheap. You can talk all you want it. You can say all you want it. And I don't want to offend nobody. I don't want to put the finger in nobody, you know. I just want a fair shot, like everybody, all those guys in there. That's all I want. With those guys, a bunch of them, about 21 pitch, I got a better record than them, and they're there, and I'm not. See, that's not right. I don't care where they put it. It's not right.
Final thing, how much are you enjoying, you know, the game right now, and particularly coming off of this World Series and some of, you know, the young stars in the game? And I'm really looking forward to Alex Cora, who we obviously both know from our time with around the Red Sox, and I think he's going to be fabulous and brings in a new era where he is able to be able to communicate directly with so many Latin players, which I think is a major attribute that he's going to have.
It's good, man. I think watching the game, I think, you know, working for the Red Sox, I go to spring training, I deal with them, I be in the clubhouse with them, talk with them. Hi, buddy, how you doing? You know, and they're good kids. How are you, sir? They all respect, and they classic kid, you know, they behave nice, and that's all I care about. Plus, some of them, they're pretty good players. I mean, you can't take that away from them.
Wait a minute, Cora.
Different era. You know, you're not going to compare my era to this era because they're different. They play different. And I don't say that we're better or they're better. It's just a different era. And then we used to have a different way to play. Now they got a new way to play. What are you going to do? You know, but baseball is...
You got to make the hall.
All right, buddy. Thank you, my friend. You know, it's... You have to... Give you the credit to this guy, because to be a ball player is not that easy, no matter from what level you play. You don't make it no difference, you know what I mean? Especially when you get to the big league. You know, it's, you accomplish me something. Because it's not easy to come in here, be in the big league and play.
Thank you.
Okay, buddy.
And what do you think about Cora?
Okay. Well, he's a guy. No, he knows the game, he played for a long time. You know, and this guy, like him, they're not worth it, like a regular guy play every day.
Yeah.
And they're in the bench, and they play, well, I don't know, 14, 15 years, maybe longer, be in the game. And this is the guy, they learn the game better than the guy play every day.
Right.
Because they got more time to watch everything around, see what's going on.
Thank you.
You know, and... And I hope he do a great job, because he's a good person. He knows the game. And the other way, too, is good for us, for the Latino, that they have the opportunity now to coach, be a manager. Because we're supposed to have that a long time ago. Now we start moving around. And that's it. And I hope they do good. That way they open the door for others. And we see we got it, you know, equal. You good, you should be a manager, you should be a manager. I don't care what color nationality you are. But that's the problem. And then we have a problem with that for years. And I don't know. I pray he do good. I want he do good. So first, he good. And he good to me. He respect me. And he show me appreciation. And he respect me for what I did in the game and who I am. That's a good thing. Okay, man. That's a good thing for somebody out to do that. I hope they do great. I can help you too in any way. When I go to spring training and they ask me to, you know, do working with the pitcher or help you or talk, I do. I do it too. I want to do good.
All right, Louis Tiant right there, and again, his career, his numbers speak for themselves. 229 wins, he had a 330 ERA, he won 20-plus games four times, and his numbers are as good, if not better, than Catfish Hunter, Jim Bunning, and Don Drysdale, all in the Hall of Fame. All right, we conclude with a kid from Concord, New Hampshire. Nope, not Matt Bonner. Ben Bingston, born and raised here in Concord, is an infielder in the Pittsburgh Pirates organization, fighting to make the big club as he was drafted by the Pirates in the 23rd round of last year's baseball draft. He was at the Granite State Baseball Dinner.
Ben Bingston was drafted by the Pittsburgh Pirates. He's from Concord, New Hampshire. And kind of tell us a little bit what the last year has been like for you.
Very exciting with college and then up into the draft and my first pro season. It was a lot of fun. Learned a lot.
and kind of been happy the way it went.
So Neil Huntington, of course, from New Hampshire, he's the general manager of the Pirates. Did that play any role in things, or was it just basically, you know, you were worthy of the draft and then therefore you got that selection?
Yeah, no, I'd like to think I was worthy of the draft. The new area scout, his name is Eddie Charles, mm-hmm. Saw something in me and brought fire to the draft and put my name in there and kept fighting for me, and they picked me, so...
Talk about growing up in Concord and playing in baseball and kind of your path to this point.
Yeah, so I was a hometown guy. I didn't go play crazy travel ball. I played all the way up through Concord, played with the Concord Cannons, played post 21 Legion, and it was a kind of a local guy. Went to Hartford, mm-hmm. Under Coach Justin Blood. He went to Franklin Pierce. But yeah, so I pride myself in being a local boy that grew up and grinded through everything and didn't need to go to all these big showcases and all these crazy things, which do help, but I felt like I was just a local guy.
Yeah, guys like, you know, Chris Carpenter's here tonight, or Matt Bonner, Jeff Locke. We'll talk about how it's much more difficult to come from New Hampshire, and at times it is beneficial to have, you know, Neil Huntington or other individuals who believe in the New Hampshire sports the way that they do. Did you find that it was more difficult because being from New Hampshire, or you?
Yeah. I call it the granite grind, where because it's Granite State, and you really gotta. Some of the, like Justin Blood, really liked how I was a go-getter, a grinder, play in the winter. I mean, you just gotta grind because it's not a full season like down in Florida or something. But yeah, I think it's definitely harder for guys up here to get looks and all that stuff. But you really gotta go out and work hard to get it.
At what age did you fall in love with baseball and decide that this was gonna be the direction you wanted to go and the passion that you had?
Yeah, ever since I grew up playing catch with my dad and going up the system, but really kind of when I was playing Little League, and I was just like, Dad, this is what I want to be. This is what I want to do when I grow up. And he said, Son, I'm going to be there for you and help you every step of the way. So it's been great, yeah, at that point.
What's it like being here, you know, tonight and waiting, you know, for some of the legends of the game to be here? And obviously, you know, Cart means so much to Granite State baseball players, but to have, you know, the Red Sox guys from the 70s are all a little older than we are, but they're still here, and they have obviously a great significance in terms of the game.
Yeah, no, definitely. When I was invited to this, I was honored, and just to be with these guys and sit with them and just the history that they've gone through, and hopefully I'll learn a little bit today from some of the guys that I'm sitting with, but totally honored to be here, and so excited to see these guys.
Best of luck to him on his baseball journey. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the show presented by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. Welcome back here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the show brought to you by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. Matt's in San Antonio. I am inside the WKXL studios here on Reddington Road in Concord, New Hampshire. And we'll talk a little Patriots here on this segment of the show. Patriots with a victory in which the final score was not as indicative of the dominance that they had during the contest against the Raiders. And for the Patriots, I mean, you look at the schedule right now, and there is one game left this year that is, in my view, going to be very challenging. And of course, the division games are coming up, and you have to, you know, pay your due diligence in order to have success in those contests. And we'll see, you know, what the games mean down the stretch for New England. But in terms of the home field advantage through the AFC, there's going to be one game likely that'll determine that, and that is the Patriots and the Steelers. And we were talking about this earlier today, where, you know, the Patriots and Steelers, for whatever reason, I believe it's the coaches and the organizational philosophies, no matter what the year is, you can rely on those teams to be, you know, consistently good. And they can have rough stretches, but they'll figure it out. You see teams like, you know, Kansas City, Andy Reid's respected as being a really good coach. They get off to a great start, and then they kind of, you know, tank. The Raiders had a great year last year, and now, you know, they're awful this year. That consistency is something that I think, you know, fans really should appreciate with the Patriots. And I think they do to some extent, but it's amazing that you look at these other teams around the league, which are viewed as being, you know, like the Raiders, you know, the next team, or the Chiefs that beat the Patriots early on this year, and they fluctuate. There's not that consistency.
I agree with you. I mean, we've talked about it, you know, comparing the Patriots to the Spurs, Pittsburgh. You know, it's interesting you throw them into the conversation, but I don't know if it's like the the image or culture of the city as well, you know, being a tough steel town or whatever.
Yeah.
But it seems, I agree with you. It seems like, you know, when you think of Pittsburgh, you think of the Steelers, you think of the toughness, you think of, you know, it's going to be a tough game no matter what, every time, you know, knock them down, drag them out, ugly. It's just the way it is. And it's funny how it seems like the city's culture image mimics that of the football team all these years.
Yeah, you're right. And obviously Bill Belichick gets the tremendous amount of credit, and he should. He's the best coach in the NFL. I think the best coach ever. He passed Tom Landry for third overall. But you look at Mike Tomlin's record with the Steelers, and it's 111-59. So he has pretty much won twice as many games as he has lost over his time with the Pittsburgh Steelers as, you know, their head coach. So you know, it's going to come down to the Patriots and the Steelers in the AFC championship game, and home field's going to be decided, in my view, by, you know, what takes place on December the I believe it's the 17th. And it seems like the NFL right now, particularly in the AFC, I mean, I don't think you could make an argument for any other team, really, in my view. We're going to get to where we did last year, where you chastised me for not having appropriate fear of the Houston Texans. But it doesn't seem like there's any other team in the AFC at this point in time that is going to be able to challenge either of those two teams. I mean, the talent level, the coaching, everything is well above where it is for anybody else. I mean, there's Jacksonville is out there. I don't think Jacksonville is going to do anything. Kansas City obviously has to turn things around, but it just seems like it's the Patriots and the Steelers, and that's it.
It does seem like that's this year's destiny for the AFC. You know, Jacksonville, it's funny you bring that up. I mean, but good for Jacksonville. I mean, can you imagine any other year bringing up Jacksonville as a potential outside shot
right
in the AFC? It's going to be pretty exciting.
Jacksonville's 7-3. They're 7-3, and
just to be mentioned, in the conversation, must feel good for those Jacksonville fans who have suffered for so many years.
And their point differential is the best in football. They are their net points is 104, which is 17 points better than the Patriots.
Yeah, you're right. Outside shot. But I agree with you. It looks like Patriots Steelers right now. If all things hold the same the rest of the season, no more injuries, which will be exciting. But I think I don't want to jinx anything and talk about it. But
injuries.
The Patriots are the team to beat. They can stay healthy. Hopefully Gronk can stay healthy this year, and you know, it'll be a fun playoff.
All right, this has been The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. Matt, have a great Thanksgiving with the family. Enjoy yourself down there, and we'll talk to you next week.
You too. Happy Thanksgiving.
All right, this has been The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment of the show brought to you by the Prescription Center.